When we began last year, I said, you know, the year that had just passed, what a year it had been, so much had happened. But brothers and sisters and young people, how much more has happened in the past 12 months has actually been an incredible year, a year of many anniversaries. Many anniversaries have reached their fulfillments in the past 12 months, and the biggest of them all is about to come in May, as we've been reminded, with the 70th anniversary of the founding of Israel. So we've seen tremendous changes, especially in Europe and the situation in Syria, the Middle East. These are all exciting things, and there's an awful lot of ground we must cover. But we're just going to concentrate on two particular areas, and that is Europe and Jerusalem. These are the two pictures that grace the front of milestones this year. The first is an artistic drawing by the Daily Telegraph cartoonist of the speech, the State of the Union speech, the EU speech that Juncker gave, and he depicts it as a Roman Caesar addressing his people. Now that's spot on, because we know the power of Rome is what lies behind the coming together of Europe at this time. It is the hand of the Vatican is directing Europe to come together. And so that was a wonderful depiction of what is happening, has been happening with great speed in the past year, the coming together of Europe as a United States of Europe. And the bottom picture is that picture of Donald Trump making the declaration that they're going to move the embassy to US embassy to Jerusalem, and that Jerusalem is recognized as the capital of the State of Israel, and we know the repercussions from that. So these are the two main areas that we're going to be looking at, but just a first quick summary of the things that have been happening, just to show how in the past year tremendous things have been moving ahead. So looking at Europe, this concept of building a United States of Europe is something which they have dreamed of for a long time, but now with Britain on the way out, they can achieve their dreams, because Britain has always been opposed to a United States of Europe. And coupled with building United States of Europe, they're wanting to have their own army. Again, Britain has been very opposed to that, because NATO is the army that has been defending Europe, and this will be a rival to it. But they are intent on building their own army, and we'll see the significance of that in a moment. And increasingly, it is behind the scenes, we don't see it very openly, but some of the articles I pull together, we see how that the papacy, Pope Francis especially, is very dedicated to this concept of a federal Europe, a United States of Europe, where the Church of Rome, can play its part as a spiritual leader. They've also been busy building bridges to Russia. In spite of the sanctions which America has been pressing for, the vast majority of the European nations don't want to see Russia as the great enemy. They want to see Russia as a friend, and one they can do business with, France and Germany especially. And they've been building their bridges to try and mitigate against the sanctions that have been put upon Russia. And then we've had Brexit, and I've just used the word bumbling. I couldn't think of a different word, and I even had to look up and see what it meant. Acting in a confused or ineffectual way, incompetent. And that's exactly what we've witnessed, hasn't it, over the past 9 months, with the 12 months of the talks have been going on. Very little real progress, and I think there probably won't be much progress. But as far as Europe is concerned, Brexit is a sideline. Their dream is being unfolded. And Juncker said just last week, we have made more progress in European defence policies over the past year, than in the last 20 years. Things are moving with speed because the plans have been laid. Germany has wanted to be a mighty power since the 1950s, and has been planning for this European army. Now the opportunity is there. We shall see it going forward at great pace. So what of Russia? Well, we've seen Russia consolidate herself in Syria. She now has long-term control over the two bases. Still there? Yes, it was nearly out. Over the long-term bases that she has, the port of Tartus and Lacteria, the Air Force one, but she also has four more bases which she's busy building. But she's got firm foothold, has control over whatever she wants to do. So we can see that from Crimea, she has stepped forward to Syria. And from Syria, she's now into Lebanon. And she's now into Egypt. And we can see this preparation that Russia is making for the events that our previous speakers have talked about. The coming down into the Middle East, the foundations. We can see with our own eyes these things happening. And she comes with many ships. And we can see the great drive that Russia has in building up her forces, her military forces. And no longer the laughing stock of the world for unreliability. She has proved in battle the effectiveness of the new technology that she is using. And she is now the prime power in the Middle East. And last week was the Munich conference where the great men of the military meet and discuss the outlook for the coming year or two. And they had to acknowledge, however much they might hate Russia, she plays a most important role. And Western officials and diplomats also acknowledged an uncomfortable truth that Russia is critical in resolving many of the world's worst conflicts. So it's putting Russia, inserting her into the Middle East, in preparation. We know why it's happening. These people have no idea what the future holds. But we see the hand of God working, putting the people into the right places at the right time. And if we look at the northern Middle East, again, the past year, great changes. We have Turkey now coming into the battle in Syria. So that not only do we have Russian forces and Iranian forces and American forces, we now have Turkish forces, all battling it out for control of part of Syria. And this is putting Turkey in a difficult position with regard to Russia. And Russia will not tolerate Turkey entering into the territory that she regards as hers. And we can see the pressure being brought upon Russia to deal with Turkey in preparation for that coming down into the Middle East. And we see the growing conflict between Iran, who is seeking to have a corridor through Iraq and Syria to the Mediterranean. We can see how that is frightening the nations to the south, the Arab nations to the south. And there is this growing conflict between north and south. And America is being drawn back into this area because it's necessary that both Britain and America should be in this region in these last days. And we have, again this week, Iran issuing a fiery warning to Israel. This was on Monday, threatening to raise Tel Aviv if Prime Minister Netanyahu followed through on his recent threat to act against it. We know how Israel has been sending her bombers to deal with the increasing flow of arms from Iran and the military bases that Iran is building in Syria. And this is a red line too far. And Israel is prepared to act and has been acting against Iran. And this is heightening the tension in the region. And if we look at the southern Middle East, again we have seen in the past year the increased alliances between these Arab nations, who traditionally were enemies of Israel, but now recognizing that Israel is their friend because they have a common enemy in Iran. And we've seen how Mrs. May has chosen, again, God puts these people in their positions. She has brought up with a biblical background. She favours Israel, is very friendly to Israel and to the Middle Eastern countries, and wants Britain to retain or go back to the situation how it was in the early 1900s, when Britain was working in the Middle East with these nations. And interestingly, we're seeing in Yemen, which always has been a problem, because we know that Yemen, Sheba, is part of the Southern Confederacy, who are opposed to go coming down, and yet for the past 20, 30 years, Iran has been interfering in the affairs of Yemen, but it seems as if the tide is beginning to turn, and Saudi Arabia is now beginning to bring Yemen under control, and we shall see a time when Yemen comes under the control of Saudi Arabia and becomes part of the Sheba-Dedan alliance of Ezekiel chapter 38. And what changes we've seen in Saudi Arabia with the new crown prince, who is determined to bring Saudi Arabia into the 21st century, now allowing women to drive, now allowing cinemas, and much more men and women working together, and women can own their own businesses. And we shall see he has a great project which is going to unite Egypt and Israel and Saudi Arabia. But we'll come to that in a moment. And this was a headline again from this week: Saudi Arabia's unholy alliance with Israel. It's fair to say that there is a strong alliance, political, military, intelligence alliance between Saudi Arabia, Israel, and we can include the UAE. Saudi Arabia has expedited the race, the closer relationship with Israel. It began long before 2015 when the new king was inaugurated. So this has got deep roots, this working behind the scenes between Saudi Arabia and Israel. And it's now coming to the fore. And the Arab leaders have had to make a stand on where they stand in relation to Jerusalem. And they're standing on the side of Israel, not like many of their fellow Arabs. So we're seeing in a wonderful way angels working so hard behind the scenes to change things. And finally, we look at the situation in Israel. She has friends in trouble from Mrs. May. And in spite of all the actions that Israel takes against Syria, Russian friendship, Putin and Netanyahu still meet, still talk constantly on the telephone. Absolutely remarkable situation. Because we know Scripture tells us that eventually Israel is going to be smitten by the one who is their friend that they've trusted in. And so that points to the fact that Russia is a friend to Israel and then turns and thinks an evil thought. And we've seen these increasing ties between Israel and the Arab nations. And further afield, over to the east, the ties between India and Israel are truly remarkable. Netanyahu visited India, the Prime Minister from India came to Israel. A remarkable year, last year. And now the energy resources. This is something I used to talk about a lot in the past, but the last few years haven't talked much about. But the energy resources in Israel, Tamar has now been on stream for at least 2 years. Leviathan is being worked on. And suddenly Israel is getting money, income from Tamar. And so looking forward to these other fields coming into stream. And it's putting Israel in a very strong position because she will have energy which her neighbours require. And just last week it was announced that Israel will export gas to Egypt. That's a turnabout, isn't it? Because Israel used to buy gas from Egypt until it was the pipeline was blown up so many times you had to give up. But now agreement has been made that excess gas that Israel doesn't need will be exported to Egypt. Netanyahu said last week, "I welcome the historic agreement which was announced on the export of Israeli gas to Egypt. This will put billions into the state treasury to benefit the education, health and social welfare of Israel's citizens." So an incredible year, brothers and sisters and young people and friends. The angels are there. God has his plan. He is working to it. All that the prophets have said will come to pass, exactly as God foretold. So let's have a look at Europe. Let's just put back that slide that we opened with. So why are we so interested in the United States of Europe and the European army? Why were this interest? Well, our previous speakers have told us about nations coming against Israel. Daniel's image, that's going to be the next slide. 2 feet, an eastern foot and a western foot that come against Israel. They're going to come with armies. Europe hasn't got an army. Europe needs an army for Scripture to be fulfilled. We're in the stage, brothers and sisters, of the feet of Daniel's image being formed. And as I say, Germany has been wanting a strong army and quietly has been building up her army and making preparations for this day when the whole of Europe can be integrated together. Germany will have the strongest army, but it will be under her control. And she will have what she has wanted, an army that can be used to come against Israel, to come to the mountains of Israel and to be broken, and then later after Armageddon, an army which under the control of the false prophet, the harlot on chapter 17, will defy the saints. So we need an army. We need a Europe that is united to be a beast system of Revelation 16. It's coming at speed. So, Daniel chapter 2, so many of us here are well acquainted with the details of Daniel chapter 2, the different nations which Daniel saw or interpreted to King Nebuchadnezzar. King Nebuchadnezzar saw the dream of these different metals standing upon, ultimately, upon feet. And we know that that represents the kingdom of men. And Daniel made it quite clear to the king that what he was seeing really was something that lay way in the future. What is going to happen in the latter days? And as Brother Stephen said, we are in these latter days. And so what we're seeing is the final parts of that Nebuchadnezzar's image being assembled together. The feet are being assembled. And so we have to have, in these last days, we have to have a dragon, which we're quite with Russia. We have to have a beast, which we're quite with Europe. And we have to have a false prophet, which we're quite with the Vatican. And the Vatican is going to be the eyes and mouth of this image. And the 2 feet, Russia and Europe, are going to come down into the land of Israel. And so we watch with great interest the development of the 2 feet, the eastern foot and the western foot. So the leg came to an end. Really, we can trace it up to 1918. The feet obviously are attached to 2 legs. The 2 legs were iron and represented Rome in its eastern and its western phases. And they went on through history, long period of time, the Holy Roman Empire and the Russian Empire. But both of them came to an end in the same year. The same year or same time period that the state of Israel was set in motion, as Brother Stephen was telling us. World War I was a pivotal change in world history. And so the iron of the leg came to an end in the West in 1918 with the resigning of the last Habsburg monarch, Charles I. Hitler then comes along and tries to establish an empire, but that wasn't the time. It wasn't God's will, and that failed. And Britain then came and joined the EU and was acted as a brake to prevent the rapid development of Europe for a period of 43 years. Now Britain is on the way out, then the foot can develop. And that's what we've seen, a post-Brexit Europe emerging. They're planning what they want, and they want it in a hurry. And we see also the growing power of religion in Europe. Don't see it in this country, but in Europe, and especially among the politicians, they look with great respect to the Church of Rome, to the Pope, and go and seek his advice and guidance and consult. Now, if you look at the other side, the Russian leg, that too came to an end in 1918. In fact, this is the 100th anniversary this year of the murder of the Tsar, Nicholas II. And again, we can see how the angels put communism in as a holding back. The time hadn't yet come. Israel wasn't a nation. Israel had to come back, and all the things happened to her and become a nation. Then the brakes could come off, and these 2 feet could develop. And we see in Russia a tremendous development. Church and state work together just as they did under the time of the Tsars, and Putin regards himself as a Tsar. And so we see the kind of model that is got to take place in Europe, of church and state working together just as they do in Russia. So let's look at the development of these feet. That's the time period we're in. We're in the feet period. And they are this strange mixture of potter's clay and iron. A divided kingdom. Strength of iron, because you saw iron mixed with miry clay. And as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. Now, iron speaks to us of Rome. And we see the power of Rome has run through history. It's run through the Russian Empire. It's run through the Holy Roman Empire. And it exists again today in what is happening in Russia and what's happening in Europe. The iron of the Roman Catholic Church especially. But that is mixed with clay. Now, clay in Scripture, Genesis chapter 2 tells us that Adam was created out of the clay, out of the dust of the ground. It speaks to us of humanity. And so it's a symbol of democracy, as opposed to the authoritarian rule of iron. And whether we look at Russia or whether we look at the EU, we have this strange mixture of authoritarian rule and democracy. And they don't mix. Because later on, when he's giving his interpretation, whereas you saw iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cling one to another, even as iron is not mingled with clay. And just at the moment, there's a big row going on in the EU. Because there is democratic elections every 4 or 5 years. There are MEPs who are elected. But the real power in the EU lies with the unelected leaders. And they've just appointed Windows 10 is wanting to update, and I don't want to be updated. Hopefully. Well, I've got a picture here. I haven't got a picture there. I don't quite know what to do.
Is it pushed in all the way?
It is pushed in all the way. Yeah, I did check that. Let me just move on the slide and see if it causes it. No. We have malfunction. Right, let me just end show. And no, there's something. Yeah, it's all pushed in. All pushed in. I don't know what's happening the other end, but
still it's got Japanese ports. It's the port.
Right. Right, that's gone to the front screen. Well, it shouldn't have the blades there, should it? I don't know. Right, so I've got my other laptop.
Can I stay back on now?
Right. Right, okay. That's slideshow. From current slide. Yes! Okay. Yeah. Right. So, yes, let's see if we're on the next one, will we? Yes, there's this big row at the moment because Martin Schallmeier, that's how you pronounce his name, he's termed the monster of Brussels and has been made head of all the Eurocrats in the EU. And he has been the man who is very opposed to Britain having any decent deal in the Brexit. And without any consultation, he has been made head. He was the man that actually put Juncker into his position, and it now seems that Juncker has repaid him by putting him in his position. So it doesn't look very hopeful for future Brexit talks. But, you know, it's just an illustration of this iron and clay. We have the authoritarian and we have the democracy, and they don't mix. So we shall see what will happen there. So the feet and clay are being formed, and the papacy is playing its role in the forming of the Western feet. He has given his blessing to this, as we shall see in a moment. So, let's just try and catch up then. So, the situation that we're seeing develop is that we have a dragon power in Russia, we have a false prophet in the Vatican, and we have the forming of a beast system. And they are wanting to come together, as Revelation tells us. They go forth to the great battle. That's why they need an army. That's why they need to be a unit together, a beast system. And so we should expect to see such a development. So we rejoice that we see it. It's a wonderful sign of the times. So Germany will be the undoubted head of any United States of Europe. She is the biggest country by population in the EU. After the reunification of East and West Germany, it gave her the biggest population. As far as GDP is concerned, she is number four in the world, number one in the EU, so she's in a powerful position. And very interestingly, she has been gathering together gold. If the euro fails, and that can be quite a strong possibility, and Germany decides to go back to the Deutschmark, she will have the gold to back that up. She has the second largest gold reserves in the world. And as an exporting power, again, she's number three in the world, number one in the EU. So a very strong position. She built herself up from ruins at the end of World War II, steadily built herself up, devoted herself entirely to this position of power and might. Now, it's interesting to see how this integrates with the Brexit timetable. The Brexit vote was taken on 23rd of June in 2016. Article 50, which triggers the countdown for the 2 years, that was in March of last year. And so Brexit should take place on the 29th of March 2019. And because whatever agreement, if agreement is made, has to be ratified by all the 27 other member states, if just one member says no, then the whole thing fails. So the EU has said we've got to have all our negotiations by October. That gives us chance for the governments to go back to their home countries and agree whatever it is that we do agree. So we're in this time period of negotiations. Now that's just the very period that the EU has chosen to press ahead with forming their own state and their own army. And it started just a few days before the Article 50 was triggered. Was the 60th anniversary of the founding of the EU, and they all had their birthday party in Rome, because that's where the declaration had first been signed. Mrs. May didn't go because she knew she was going to trigger Article 50 and she wouldn't be very welcome. So there was a birthday party without Britain there. Now, that was the 25th of March 2017. Then on 13th of September, Juncker gave his State of the Union speech, which we'll look at, where he declared that this is what we want, a union, an army, great changes, integration. That was followed up a fortnight later by the new President of France, Macron. He gave a speech outlining exactly the same kind of things. And then on the 13th of November, the EU leaders have their gathering, and PESCO is probably a meaningless abbreviation, but we'll see what that is all about. Military, we'll look at that in a moment. And then just earlier this year, last month, was the 55th anniversary of the Elysee Treaty, which was when France and Germany got together 55 years ago, buried their differences, and determined to build Europe together. And France was the dominant power from then on for a long time, and Germany quietly worked in behind the scenes, but has now overtaken France. But that treaty is being updated. Again, we should look at that. So all those things have happened in a very brief period of time. As he said, you know, what we've achieved in the last year, we've achieved more than in 20 years. So, very briefly, the 60th birthday bash in Rome in March of last year, John Redwood, who is a British MP, he's not in the European Parliament, he's in the British Parliament, he has a diary which he writes every day, very interesting insight because he firmly believes that Britain's got to get out. He knows what the EU is all about. And he summed up this declaration that was made at the end of the 60th birthday party by saying that it was a far-sighted endeavour. Now we know what the EU wants without the UK. The Rome Declaration, signed last weekend, sets out the full scheme for the Union. It is as Eurosceptics described. As the Declaration says, we have built a unique Union with common institutions, strong values. Unity is both a necessity and our free choice. They are prepared to give their power to the beast. Our union is undivided and indivisible. And it sets out four areas where they're going to change things. The area that Britain is most opposed to, the freedom of movement of people. Second, single currency. Everybody will have to be in the euro. A social Europe with benefits and social policies. And the fourth is a stronger Europe in the global scene, committed to strengthening its common security and defence with a common defence supply industry. So John Redwood said, so there we have it. It was the creation of a large new state after all. The problem is at the moment that all 27 different members have their own little military forces and spend their money on buying the equipment they feel they need. But what the leaders are saying, we've got to pull together, we've got to work together and have one common type of tank or one common aircraft and pool our resources, work together. That's building the beast system and its army. And then this speech by Juncker, the State of the Union, just like the Americans and the Russians, the EU has a State of the Union talk. And as the president of the European Commission, he delivered his speech, and he was in a jubilant mood. He says, "We're catching the wind in our sails." Now, we from Britain, our cartoonists show a picture of Britain sailing away from the EU. In the EU, they have pictures of the EU sailing away from Britain. They realize that Britain is the brake that's preventing them doing what they want. So they now rejoice. We're catching the wind in our sails. We're making progress at last. And he sets out various things that he needed. But by 2025, a fully fledged European defence union, stronger European and monetary union, euro for all members, and ruled out membership for Turkey. That's his vision. That's what's going to happen. We know, because the scripture tells us there has to be a beast system. It's got to be like it was in time past, the Holy Roman Empire. Emperor and Pope ruling Europe together. And hence the absolute spot-onness of this cartoon in the Telegraph on the 15th of September. As I say, that was followed up a fortnight later by Macron, a young man full of ideas and dynamism, determined to pull France into the 21st century. And what he's looking for is a rebooting of the EU. And he wants to do it in a hurry. He wants to get things moving. And he wants to do it by a process of common education universities. So that people in Germany go to a university, say in France or in Italy, and vice versa, people move around. So that the younger generation grow up to regard Europe as a one entity instead of individual nations. This is what they're trying to do away with, the nation states. Think of Europe as one whole country. And they're talking about having pan-European political parties. So that in the European Parliament, not only will there be representatives from France and Italy and Spain and all the rest of it, but there will be political parties which span all those countries. And that will increase. So, yeah, and he too wants a European Defence Force. And Stratfor, there's the American intelligence people, they looked at these two speeches of Juncker and Macron, and put it here that both speeches have served their purpose to jumpstart discussions of a deeper integration and to outline the grand plans for reform that Europe so desperately needs. And so, a month on from that, at one of the heads of government's meetings in Brussels, they took the historic step towards a united military. And this is where this PESCO comes. They do love their permanent structured cooperation. This is saying, right, we're all going to pool our resources so that we can build this military quickly. We don't want to be dependent on America. We don't want to be dependent on NATO. We want our own army. And so we can see how over the past 60 years, Europe has been advancing towards this United States of Europe. If you have a state, you need territory. And the EU has been steadily enlarging, hasn't it, for over 60 years. And if you're going to be United States of Europe, you need seamless borders. Well, they put that into place in 1985 with the Schengen Agreement. You also need a common currency. If you're going to be like America, you know, all those different states, but working as one, you need a common currency. Well, that's been in place since 2002. And now we've got the last step. You need a common army. And that's what they did last year. So we see these steps towards the United States of Europe. And the summary of that meeting, 23 European Union member states took a major step toward forming a European army. The nations agreed to coordinate their defence spending and planning in order to boost the fighting effectiveness of the EU as a whole rather than designing their militaries only to defend their individual borders. A historic moment in European defence, said one of them, a milestone in European development. And this Italian writer had this to say, he summed it up beautifully. EU leaders are planning a massive arms build-up. Both the financing plans and institutional infrastructure for such a consolidation of European military policy are being put into place at an astonishing speed. Billions of euros have been put on the table for R&D and weapons procurement, plans to militarise development aid, circumvent constitutional restraints, and bring European forces to the battleground are on paper and ready to go. So, with speed, he says, and that is indeed what is happening. And say, last month was this 55th anniversary of the Elysee Treaty, and Macron met with Merkel, and they agreed to restart their treaty and have another go. Berlin and Paris would like their alliance to be regarded as a motor for further European integration. That's the in word, integration. The new treaty aimed at a prosperous and competitive Europe, more sovereign, united, and democratic. That's a chance, isn't it, to be democratic? The leaders call for deepening their cooperation to not only include finance, social, and economic policies, but also foreign, defence, security, and development policies, as well as the fight against terrorism and crisis management. This would enhance the Berlin-Paris axis as a central power structure of the European zone. So it's inserting France and Germany as the undoubted leaders of the growing EU. And again, if you look at history, France and Germany did play their role in the Holy Roman Empire. So, what about Brexit and what's happening there? As I say, we're in this time period of negotiations, and both sides seem to be very entrenched. And the EU really has no flexibility because Barnier has to speak for 27 other members. And so he can't just say, well, yes, that doesn't seem very reasonable, let's go down that line, because he hasn't got the approval to do that. So he has to stick very rigidly to a preset agenda that they have put forward. And it's an agenda which is against Britain. They don't like the fact that Britain is leaving them, and they don't want other members to leave. And they want to punish Britain as much as they can, because Britain's going to leave a big hole in their finances. So what can we say? Well, we can't say much. We just have to wait. We know the outcome. Britain has to leave, and I think she'll probably leave without an agreement. Mrs. May is still Prime Minister. A few months ago, it didn't seem possible. But again, God has raised up the right type of person. She's not everybody's cup of tea, but she is holding a very disparate cabinet, desperately holding them together. We'll wait to see what she's going to say in her speech on Friday. But as I say, it looks as if Britain will leave without an agreement. And why worry? Many nations around the world are desperate to sign trade agreements with Britain. They want to trade with Britain. And all the doom and gloom which was predicted would happen if Britain took this step of leaving Europe, it hasn't taken place. And there is a growing pressure from the other EU, or from the EU members, from the trade organisations, for the EU not to put ideology above trade. But I don't think the EU is going to listen, because ideology means everything to the EU. This is their dream, United States of Europe. Britain has scorned it, and so they're not going to cooperate with them. Never mind, God will bless her. She will be a free trading spirit around the world. And it's interesting, isn't it, how the Irish border has become the big stumbling block, because the Irish don't want any borders, physical borders. They want to enjoy the trade that they have done. But if Britain leaves, Northern Ireland leaves, and there will have to be borders. How that is solved is an insoluble problem, or seems to be. We just wait and see. But Britain has an independent role. The angels will see to it that that happens. And so we see these three powers that are developing today, and we see how they cooperate together. The beast and the dragon cooperate together. The false prophet and the beast are working hand in glove. And the dragon and the false prophet. So we see an amazing amount of cooperation between there. So these are real live institutions that Revelation 16, the Lord Jesus told us in these last days, the days that will see the coming of the Lord Jesus. We see this integration of these powers working together. France, like Germany, is very opposed to all the sanctions that are put upon Russia, and she is using her own dialogue, the Trianon dialogue, which the initiative appears aiming at minimizing European sanctions against Russia for its support of separatists in East Ukraine. The French-Russian project is aimed at encouraging interactions through joint theatre productions, school trips, sister city agreements, and real estate investments. The same method that they're using within Europe to make people think of Europe as one whole. So by this mixing together of Russian and French children and that from a young age to make them change their attitude to Russia, part of this initiative. And Mrs. Merkel is very keen to do business. They did an awful lot of business with Russia, which the American sanctions have stopped. But she has supported the doubling of the Nord Stream. Nord Stream was a twin pipeline which brings Russian gas straight into Germany. And from there it eventually comes to other countries, comes to Britain. But they've made this agreement and investing the money in doubling the capacity of it. A lot of voices in the EU unhappy at that because it is strengthening the control that Russia has in European affairs. But Germany is determined to press ahead with it. Now, last week was this Munich Security Conference that we just mentioned very briefly at the beginning, where the world leaders and military experts gathered to look at the world's situation and give their opinions on what is going to happen. And this is where this quote about, well, you know, loathe Russia, but we've got to work with her. And it was said that on the sidelines of this conference, which Russia attends, there was a lot of interaction between the European leaders and the Russian leaders. But what the Europeans trumpeted last week at this conference was they were building their own army. Security, we're going to provide it. We have paved the way politically to establish an army of Europeans, said the German defense minister. Europe needs more steel tanks and fewer think tanks, said the Polish prime minister. In the foreseeable future, the EU will be able to build up its arms to such an extent it will be no longer need US support. You see, Germany and Europe are going to come with Russia against Israel, but Britain and America are going to be opposed to that. So we have to see America withdrawing NATO from Europe and Europe standing on her own feet. And that's what they're doing. They're claiming they're making good progress. And again, the Juncker said, we made more progress in European defence policy over last year than in the last 20 years. So that's quite a fascinating thing. Now, the false prophet and the beast, the Pope has been a wholehearted, or the popes have been wholehearted supporters, and Francis is no exception. And he said last year in an interview, that if Europe is going to come to anything, she must become federal. And by federal, it means to unite together, to have a United States of Europe. So he is wholeheartedly behind it, because he sees that is the way for the Vatican to gain power and influence in a modern Europe. And Article 17 in the Lisbon Treaty does encourage, dictate to the EU leaders that they must consult the churches. And consulting the churches means consulting the Roman Catholic Church, because the others are so disparate. And there have been many meetings between the Vatican and the EU leaders to guide social policy especially. So strong influence behind the scenes. But then when we look at the interplay between the false prophet and the dragon, that truly is remarkable. And this was, Putin has visited popes, John Paul twice, Benedict once, Francis twice, and many phone calls flow between the Vatican and Moscow. Pope Francis has played a huge role in this rapprochement with his approach to the Orthodox Church and his willingness to meet with Patriarch Kirill of Moscow. Relations between the Moscow Patriarch and the Holy See have been encouraged by President Putin. So we see both sides. Vatican wants to deal with Russia because Russia and Putin have said that they will look after, they will defend Christians wherever they are being persecuted. Pope's given up on America. So there is this growing coming together of the Vatican and Russia, with Putin being very keen on it. And the 2016 meeting between the two leaders, when they met for the first time for 9,000 years in Cuba, that was a big stepping stone forward. And here was a comment just earlier in January by an Italian newspaper. 2018 could be the year that Pope Francis makes a historic trip to Moscow. Two recent statements have confirmed the birth of a new diplomatic trend. The synchronicity between Vatican and Vladimir Putin in terms of foreign policy is visibly growing. Pope Francis is in a hurry to go to Russia, and Vladimir Putin is ready to welcome him with open arms. And so, you see, if the Vatican has got to be the eyes and the mouth of Daniel's image, controlling what the 2 feet are doing, it is necessary that there is this cooperation between the Vatican and the Russian Church, and the Vatican and Russia itself. And so we see, brothers and sisters, young people and friends, we see the Bible coming alive before our eyes. It has to be. It is happening. So, briefly, let's just turn to the last aspect, just looking at Israel, and that's what the slide we saw. The gas situation is so fascinating. The Zohar field is being developed. That's in Egyptian territory. The first gas came on shore in December and is being steadily developed. The Aphrodite field belongs to Cyprus, and drilling is taking place, started last year. And Leviathan is on the way for 2019 for gas to be flowing from the Leviathan. So suddenly, there are, Leviathan is a huge field, the Zohar field is even bigger, and the Aphrodite is not insignificant. So suddenly there's a vast amount of gas being developed in this region. And they're not just a stone's throw away, but they're only a few 50-100 kilometres apart, these three big fields. And so there's been a lot of talk. What are we going to do with this gas? It's going to be far more than Israel needs. There will be gas to export. How do we export it? Well, the idea was to link up the fields back to their countries, but then to build a pipeline up into Turkey and supply Turkey and from Turkey into Europe. And that has been on the cards for a long, long time, but we can see with this present situation between Israel and Turkey that that's a no-no, because Turkey is very hostile to Israel at the moment and very hostile to what is happening the drilling off Cyprus, because Cyprus is still divided between the Turkish and the Greek sides, and Turkey is very hostile to this kind of development. So what they've been looking at is to do a much more expensive answer to the solution, to build a pipeline from Cyprus to go to Crete, and then from Crete up into Greece, and therefore go up into the EU from there. And this is a very ambitious plan, and is being looked at, and the EU is very keen on doing this. But the problems are huge. If it ever gets built, it will be an amazing pipeline, because the Mediterranean is very, very deep. And what is just emerging now, especially in the light of the signing this week, was it, or last week, of an agreement to supply Israeli gas to Egypt, is they're now looking at Egypt being the hub. And so gas is supplied to Egypt. They have the facilities to turn that gas into low-pressure LPG, which can then be shipped to wherever it's needed. And that seems a likely thing, and that will cement the friendship, the cold peace that has existed between Egypt and Israel will cement that in a much better way and help to lead to stability in the Middle East. So that's quite an exciting possibility. But there is also another scheme which is almost ready to run, and that is to turn the gas into electricity, so ship the gas ashore to Israel, use that to run gas turbines to generate electricity, and then lay an electrical cable to Cyprus, to Crete, and then that can link up with an existing electrical cable which links Crete to Greece. And it's much easier to lay an electric cable. And again, the EU is very keen on that, because it will bring Cyprus and Crete more into the EU. Now, we know that they belong to the eastern foot, not the western foot, so that's not going to happen. But this is the plan, and it's been given a big boost. It's supposed to be starting sometime this year. It's been given a big boost by another firm coming along, Quantum, who want to lay a high-speed fiber optic cable from Israel to Cyprus to Crete and onwards up to link up to Italy, all the way around to Spain, to Bilbao, where it will link up with the high-speed transatlantic cable which takes it to America. Now, Quantum are investing $200 million in this, and the idea is that as they lay the electric cable on this first part all the way up to Crete, and they can lay the fiber optic cable, and that will save a lot of money. So probably we shall see that happening. And what's so interesting is it puts Israel, links her with America, two ends of a high-speed fiber optic cable which will transform transmission. Israel had a good year last year. Exports up more than 5%. It's expected to her exports will exceed $100 billion. That's going somewhat for a little tiny country the size of Wales. And she now has friends. Like him or loathe him, he is put there by God. He is fulfilling God's plan and purpose, and he has declared himself firmly on the side of Israel. And you know what an eruption there was when he made this declaration. Interestingly, Russia had made a similar declaration recognizing that Jerusalem was the capital of Israel. That was back in March, and nobody batted an eyelid. But when America does it, and especially Trump, then the whole world erupts. And Erdogan of Turkey called the Islamic nations together to say, what are we going to do to counter this? And what was so fascinating was the nations, the Islamic nations that went, and those that didn't go. Because those of Egypt and Saudi Arabia down in the south, who have now sided with Israel, they didn't attend. because they recognize that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. So that again is a kind of map that we've looked at in the past when we looked at Sheba and Dedan, the merchants of Tarshish. It's coming to pass before our eyes. So wonderful. So let's just see Israel's relation to her neighbours. Egypt, well, Israel has behind the scenes been helping Egypt against ISIS in Sinai. And now this signing of this natural gas agreement again gives very strong linkage between Egypt and Israel. As far as Jordan is concerned, again, Israel is supplying gas to Jordan. Had an agreement 3 years ago. And just this year, she's put in extra equipment at the Allenby crossing so that it can double the number of lorry crossings in a day. And she has reopened her embassy in Amman just this year. So great changes and linkages behind the scenes, this growing alliance between Israel and her neighbours. As far as Saudi Arabia is concerned, this was from Geostrategy on the 9th of January. The Saudi-Israeli strategic alliance axis takes shape. Israel and Saudi Arabia have moved to tighten military and security cooperation, an effort to counter Iran's expanding presence. And they're even talking about buying Israeli defense equipment for Saudi Arabia. And Saudi seems to have given agreement to Air India to be able to fly direct flights from India to Israel over Saudi Arabia instead of having to skirt round, which takes an extra 2 hours. So great changes are taking place, brothers and sisters. And Newsweek, end of last year, have this interesting article how Israel and Saudi Arabia can halt Iran's march and pull the Middle East back from the brink. This is a new emerging regional reality. Because while Israel and Saudi Arabia are not exactly singing from the same hymn sheet, for the first time in history, they're singing very similar tunes with a chorus dominated by one word, Iran. Iran, the world's number one exporter of terror, number one cause of instability in the region, and the biggest threat to the Middle East. So by working together, they can counter that to bring about this time of peace. And this new project, which the new Crown Prince is initiating, to build this huge free port city on the borders of Egypt and Jordan and Israel, with bridges going across the islands, which Egypt just recently handed back to Saudi Arabia to build land bridges across to Egypt. She wants Israel's cooperation. She wants Israel's gas to supply the gas there. She wants Britain to help build the infrastructure for us. We see in a wonderful way, if this comes off the ground, how Britain and America and Israel are being drawn into the orbit of Saudi Arabia. Absolutely incredible. And these two states there, I'll just skip over those. So Mike Pence, the number two in the United States government, he will address the Knesset last month. Fascinating speech. And there's just two little extracts. We stand with Israel because your cause is our cause, your values are our values, and your fight is our fight. The winds of change can already be witnessed across the Middle East. Long-standing enemies are becoming partners. Old foes are finding new ground for cooperation. And the descendants of Isaac and Ishmael are coming together in common cause as never before. Brothers and sisters, Sheba, Dedan, the merchants of Tarshish, we're seeing it happen before our eyes. So there's so much. If you haven't got milestones, go and buy a copy. Only the cost of a cup of coffee, and if you have the electronic, it's only a cup of tea. So just close with an exhortation. The Lord God has given each one of us the most complex matter in the known universe, a brain. And those brains are under our control. What we allow into those brains, what we store in those brains. And we know it's an absolutely incredible mechanism. 100,000 trillion neural connections No, I've exaggerated, haven't I? 100 trillion, 100,000 billion neural connections, 1,000 times more than the stars in our galaxy. And messages don't go through my brain at that speed, but supposed to go at 260. It slows down as you get older. But no, 100,000 miles of nerve fibers all packed into there. And God's given us this brain to look after. That's what he's going to take into the kingdom of God. Not our possessions, but our brains, brothers and sisters. So let's make sure in these last days, where so much is happening to reassure us, coming of the Lord Jesus is very close. So I'll just finally put my snippets, if you're not signed up to snippets, where you can keep up to date with all the wonderful things that happen, which reassure us that this is a living book. This is the word of the living God. His angels are working to bring it to pass. May he come soon.